money. Quickly to Wall. Wall measures. Beal gets open for three. Dagger! They don't have any time.
Here comes Pierce with 5 seconds left. Pierce with three. Pierce with two. Pierce fall away at the horn. It's gone!
Morris, Wall, Beal, and Gortat. Porter can't find anybody. Gives it to Wall. Working against Bradley for three.
Happy playoffs eve. This is the Locked On Wizards podcast, and I'm your co-host, Noah Getzel. Joining me tonight is Arthur Renault. We are from the blog Wizards Extra, so be sure to follow us on there. And this is the Locked On Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We've got great stories with all the off-season shakeup going on with the coaching thing, so we've got some breaking news stories out there. Follow Locked On Knicks. Tune in to Locked On Magic and Locked On Hornets to hear all about Jeff Hornacek getting fired, Frank Vogel, and Steve Clifford as well. So tonight we've got Arthur Renault. It's been a while since we've chatted, so I'm glad to have you, Arthur. And we're going to be talking about Jody Meeks's come like out of left field suspension due to performance enhancing drugs. It was an anti-drug violation. He'll be out. I've got to double check. I think it's like 25 games or so. The rest of the season, to be sure, and he's not getting paid for that time. And then we're also talking about signing Ty Lawson from the Chinese Basketball Association, and finally some of the key matchups entering Saturday's matchup against the Toronto Raptors in Game 1 in Canada. So, Arthur, what's going on? How are you feeling these days?
Pretty good. I'm just really looking forward to Saturday, which at this point is tomorrow. I've been watching some, not rewatching games entirely, but just highlights, like the 10-minute highlight videos that you can find on YouTube. And obviously, you only see, you know, when each team scores, but you can learn a lot, and there's definitely a lot to dissect in terms of, you know, how the Raptors won and how the Wizards won. But it's definitely a huge factor, in my opinion, that Wall did not play in all the games. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see like how much of a difference he makes when the Wizards and Raptors split the season series.
Joy to reach
win on their opposing home court and home court. So they split, basically.
Mm-hmm. So the big story today was Jody Meeks, who didn't play a big role with the Wizards. He was supposed to be, you know, the backup shooting guard who comes in and hits all of these threes and kind of jump starts the second unit offense. And he never really got too many minutes and, you know, performed to the expectations. But now he violated NBA's anti-doping program for testing positive for levels of Ipamorlin and GHRP2, which are growth hormones, both banned substances. This was a shock to me. Did you have any inclination that he got stronger over the course of the season or anything like that? Seeing Jody in the locker room, it didn't seem like a steroid user. You never know. Like, I guess Rashard Lewis, he was like a toothpick as well, but, you know, he got caught with steroids. What kind of impact do you think this has on the Wizards moving forward now that they really have no backup shooting guard?
Well, fortunately, it kind of makes the Wizards, and specifically Coach Brooks, adjust to the lineups that he would want to play. Everything makes sense in hindsight. Like the previous game, there was a lineup that Brooks experimented with. I believe it was Satoransky, Porter, Oubre, Scott, and Mahimi. I don't really know if that's the first time he's ever run that lineup, but I'm pretty sure it is. It was very interesting to see Otto Porter in the shooting guard role, just because naturally he's the small forward and he's been pushed to a stretch four role. But I haven't really seen him much as a shooting guard. And I think the Wizards might be onto something, and I'm really hoping that they use Porter a lot more during the playoffs, especially as a shooting guard with a bench unit, especially with Satoransky when, you know, they've built chemistry while Wall's been out.
You don't want Oubre playing shooting guard, if that's the lineup you talked about? I forgot. I think he said Satoransky, Oubre, Porter, Mike Scott, and was it Mahimni or Markieff Morris?
Mahimni.
Okay.
Yeah, so, like, that lineup was pretty nice because, I mean, Otto Porter is by far, like, the offensive focal point, along, you know, with, like, ball movement. And, you know, if Mike Scott is on with his jump shot, that's a pretty good lineup, and especially, and hopefully, you know, Kelly Oubre returns to form this playoff series, otherwise it'll be over before it starts. But yeah, it all makes sense. Ty Lawson, unfortunately though, Otto Porter is questionable and so is Mike Scott for tomorrow, so I don't really know if Ty Lawson was the move, because you can play with Satoransky at shooting guard, you done Otto Porter at shooting guard, so I think, you know, maybe a backup small forward would have been nice, like just some random piece to throw out there, but, you know, here we are.
Yeah, and the good news is that Porter and Mike Scott both practiced today, so that's a step in the right direction for sure. I want to talk now before we get into Ty Lawson. Actually, we'll talk about Ty Lawson for a minute, and then Kyle Lowry's comments, which you alerted me of, which, you know, makes sense, but it kind of, he said, this is game seven for us, which is how you should approach a playoff game. We'll talk about that in just a second. So, Ty Lawson, did you see this one coming whatsoever? Coming from the Chinese Basketball League, he played decently in his 69 games last year, but, like, now we've got how many players? Two players, I guess, who are below 6'1" in him and Frazier. Yeah. And, you know, they're each... Ty Lawson's 31, so he's not going to have the same wheels that he used to. And it's just baffling to me that the Wizards have 5 point guards on their roster.
Yeah, it's... First of all, Brian Kramer texted us in our group chat, and I was just like, what? Like, why? I didn't even know that players could be eligible for the playoffs.
Yeah, I had no clue.
So late. But apparently it's because he was never in the NBA this calendar year, so this season, so he's technically allowed. His team in China just got eliminated from the playoffs, so I don't know what that means, but I guess, yeah, I don't know. I don't really have much to make out of it. I think Brooks mentioned today that he doesn't know, like, how much he's actually going to play.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's just a body. But, you know, we have a lot of bodies, apparently, that are just going to be watching from the bench. Off the top of my head, you know, Devin Robinson is there, Chris McCullough, Jason Smith, Tim Frazier.
Right.
You know, Ty Lawson. So there's going to be a pretty expensive bench just watching the playoffs this round or this year. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and with the, what's this team called? The Shanghai, I've got to double check.
Yeah, I'm going to try to remember what it is.
Sorry, Shandong Lions. I feel like we played them in preseason, but for that team, in 46 games, he averaged 25.5 points a game, 6.5 assists, 4.6 rebounds, 2.2 steals, shot... let's see, 54% and hit 40% of his threes. So I'm sure there's not too much defense in this Chinese Basketball Association, but
yeah.
I mean, at least he's not putting up scrub numbers while he's overseas. So
yeah, and at least that 40% from three is encouraging. So. Mm-hmm.
Is it the same distance, the 3-point line? I hope so.
Oh, that's a good question. Oh man, it might not be.
Whatever.
Well, long twos, you know.
Yeah. So we are going to take a quick break now, but as we come back from the break, it's going to be all Wizards-Raptors preview analysis, and we're going to talk about Kyle Lowry's comments and where both teams kind of sit right now in terms of, like, their psyches and how they're performing. Both teams have been a little bit shaky. Well, the Wizards have been shaky all year, but the Raptors were a little bit more mortal entering the playoffs, so we're going to do previews of basically every, you know, we're going to break down the front court, the back court, the benches, the coaching, even the intangibles. We're going to break it all down. So stay with us. Locked On Wizards is coming right back. Again, these are your co-hosts, Noah Getzel and Arthur Renault. Be right back. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Locked On Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Be sure to give us a follow on Twitter at Locked On Wizards. You should also follow Arthur Renault at District Mamba and me, Noah Getzel, Noah_Getzel. And you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify or Google Play. We also have podcasts on SoundCloud, and you can check us out. I think I mentioned on Twitter we post all the links too. So be sure to check out all of the Wizards insider information along with Wizards Extra, Wizards XTRA, which is the blog that we both report for. There's lots of recap articles after home games. We have all sorts of player interviews and good stuff like that. So let's dive into this preview a little bit more between the Wizards and Raptors. Kicks off, or tips off, I should say. It's not football. Tips off tomorrow night at 5:30. When you look at the starting lineups alone, and don't consider any other factors, you know, obviously the Wizards have been banged up this year, and the Raptors had 59 victories, but do you think it's kind of even? Do you think one team has the edge in terms of just their starters, Arthur?
I would say, you know, off the top of my head, looking at just names, you know, I think the Raptors have, at the moment, like a more solid starting five. And that's mainly because, you know, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, for all the critiques they receive for their postseason play, they're pretty solid and they're all-stars. So you have to respect that. And then you have Jonas Valanciunas, who added a three-point shot, and you know, mm-hmm. rewatching some of the recaps, like, it's ridiculous having a center that can shoot threes.
41% this year. Yeah,
I can't imagine what that does for your offense.
But and then
you have
Ibaka can hit them too.
Serge Ibaka, right? Yeah. Serge Ibaka, who could easily play the five for a small lineup for them.
Oof, that'd be scary.
Both a defensive monster and, you know, rebounds, and just a more athletic and active version of Markieff Morris. And then who's their small forward at the moment?
OG Anunoby.
Right, yeah, and he's someone that I believe in one of the later matchups against the Wizards just went bonkers from three. So they have pieces. Right now, like, the Wizards are, first of all, like, we don't know for certain if Porter is playing, so that's already a handicap. Wall is, he showed signs of life, but definitely, like, there's some rust there.
Yeah.
And Bradley Beal definitely logging way too many minutes. I'll be very interested to see what he's like, how fresh he is for game one, and how many minutes they end up playing. But I think I would right now take, and especially for the 59 wins, the Raptors starting five. But that's,
and I'm sure you take their bench as well, right? That's a no-brainer.
Yeah, easily. But that's not to say, like, the bench comparison, I think, is more favorable for Toronto. But the starting five, like, if Wall is back and he just, you know, hits his playoff level, and Bradley Beal can somehow, like, regain energy, Markieff Morris has his jump shot, and Porter is healthy, I'm taking the Wizards, mm-hmm. pretty much. They're starting five.
Yeah, and Morris has definitely looked better as the season has progressed. He's been shooting better. I think he's got, like, career high, last time I checked, career high in three-point shooting and field goal shooting percentage overall. So that's a reassuring note. So let's go back to the backcourt for a second, and the Wizards have talked a lot. I'm saying, like, John Wall and Brad Beal, those are the big talkers, and they've mentioned a few times that they think they're the best backcourt in, like, all of the NBA. And the Warriors, pretty soon after, you know, their championships, proved them wrong. And then I would say probably, like, the Blazers are definitely up there, but the Raptors are right neck and neck, especially in the Eastern Conference. And I just, like, when you look position by position, is John Wall still the best player in this series? Because the last time they faced off, there was no doubt that he was. You know, DeMar DeRozan didn't have as many facets of his game. He would be a turnover machine when he'd get trapped and he couldn't, you know, shoot threes. He still doesn't shoot them great, but he's developed into a much better playmaker and three-point shooter. Bradley Beal obviously has added some facets of his game. He's much better as a defender. He can find open teammates a little bit better, even though he still struggles a little bit with that. And he gets more rebounds for sure, more blocks, more steals. So he's stuffing the stat sheet. When you look at these four guards, if you were, you know, starting a franchise for just this playoff series, is there one guy in particular who you would want to take, Arthur?
At the moment.
Yes.
You know, huge asterisk at the moment. You know, you have to respect what DeMar DeRozan has done.
Mm-hmm.
He, like you mentioned, in the past, would just brick jumpers left and right, and, you know, analytics hate, like, mid-range jump shots, and that's what kind of DeRozan, you know, thrives.
They're so
in.
Beautiful, though. He's always hitting, like, these fadeaways and, like, contested floaters in the paint. He makes it look easy.
Yeah, he really does, and it's a lost art at this point, because, you know, with Kobe retiring, like, not many players really go crazy from the mid-range anymore, but, right now, out of, you know, respect for the opponent, and to show that we're not completely biased, I would easily pick DeMar DeRozan at the moment, but, you know, it, all things considered, everyone's healthy, would still be the franchise guy and the best player going into the series.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Wall is dependent on, you know, others making shots. So if Bradley Beal rediscovers, like, a consistent three-point shot, and, you know, Porter and Kelly Oubre especially comes back strong from three, then Wall is easily, like, the most important player there on both sides of the floor. Like, they, like, our starting backcourt likes to say that they play both ends. Some nights, though, not against 500 or under opponents.
It's funny that you say DeRozan's the best, because yesterday I was talking with the Locked On Raptors host, Sean Mobley is a I'm confused. Anyways, Sean Woodley, you should follow him on Twitter too. You've got lots of good Raptors perspective coverage there. Follow the Locked On Raptors. But he thinks that actually Kyle Lowry is the best player on the team, just because he has a lot of veteran intangibles. He's the best defender that they've got. And his numbers, even though, you know, it sounds like every year he's kind of dropping off a little bit, little by little, you know, he's still having a great year. He's averaging, where was it, like 16 points a game. He gets a lot more rebounds than John Wall, that's for sure. 16.2 points, 6.9 assists, which is like 2.5 off John Wall's numbers. More rebounds, 5.6 rebounds, and he still gets a steal a game. Of course, he can't block shots quite as well, because he's, what, like 6'2" or something. Lowry, let's see. Yeah, he's 6 foot even, actually, so I was off on that one. And how old is he now? He's 32 years old. So, you know, he's getting up there in age. So that was a little bit surprising that the Locked On Raptors host thought he is still the best player, even though, you know, the Raptors really embrace a team approach a little bit more than they have in years past. And the Wizards are kind of, in their victories, especially the victories over top-tier opponents, the Wizards play team ball quite well and get all the assists. But, you know, a lot of these games, John and Brad just try to do way too much, and it reflects poorly in the lack of motion and lack of ball movement. So right now you rate DeRozan above Beal. What do you think John Wall coming off his surgery is above Lowry, or who gets the edge in that point guard matchup?
It's interesting what, you know, the league, and obviously, like you just mentioned, the Locked On Raptors host talked about Kyle Lowry, because, and I'm going to try and be like, to not necessarily let my fan side come out here, but I honestly feel every time we match up with Lowry, and including like the last couple of years, maybe before that it was different, but the last couple of years, that you mentioned he's turning 33 is like really surprising to me, because I didn't realize, like, I mean, that's kind of old, you know, that's like basically on the way out in terms of, like, you know, prime, that's past prime. But anyways, I haven't really been impressed with what Lowry can do on the floor. And I really think although this year it was different because it was a lot of against Satoransky. I think Satoransky can get to Lowry just because of his length, and you know, he started off pretty strong defensively for a while was out. But I think with Lowry, it's a lot of whether the referees blow a whistle or they don't. I think that gets to him a lot more than it should be, and it affects him. Because, I mean, last year, or during the year of the sweep, like 2015, Lowry was really, like, strung out on foul calls and getting ejected and fouling out. So that was more like a head game. And mentioning, like, how old he is and, you know, he lost a lot of weight and he's pretty, like, lean now. It's really, I've yet to really be impressed by Kyle Lowry. He obviously has a lot of different ways that he can contribute to the game. I can definitely see how he can be the best, you know, defender on that team. But I think with, like, Wall and his length and Satoransky and his length, I think that's what bothers Lowry. So, you know, I mean, I would hate to see it this postseason that Kyle Lowry is, you know, better than Wall, because, I mean, that would be bad.
Right.
But, yeah, like, I'm a little bit surprised by that, just because I read everywhere, like, oh, Kyle Lowry this, Kyle Lowry that, and then we play them, and he's getting mad at the refs. And,
I've never seen a point guard have such foul trouble as he's had, not necessarily as much like this season, but in the last playoff series, like, it seemed like he was just riding the pine so much. And when he was in the game, he was shooting horribly. And then even DeRozan, like, he shot high volume and he shot poorly tallied a bunch of points, but both of them really struggled. But that was a very different team, because the Raptors were way more dependent on two guys than they are right now. And I want to focus on the front court and the bench, because the Raptors just spread the wealth incredibly well. Their bench averages more than 40 points a game, so that's got to be one of the top in the league. So when it comes to, like, the front court unit, I know that you're pretty high on Porter and you like Morris, but who do you think ends the game at center for the Wizards in terms of, like, the legitimate front court instead of just the starting front court? Would you like to see Oubre in the game or Satoransky in the game in the fourth quarter, assuming that the other starters are the same and Gortat is just sitting on the bench?
Right, so, like, Porter's playing.
Yeah.
Because I think it'd be interesting if Porter doesn't play really quickly. If like, Satoransky and Kelly Oubre play with Wall and Beal, and then, you know, probably, like, Morris. It'd be interesting to see, like, what would happen. I mean, I don't know if there's really room for experimenting in the playoffs, but, you know, if Porter's out, I'd rather do that than play Ty Lawson, you know, because that could be disastrous. But, I'm not really sure at the moment, but I think I would rather have, for defensive purposes, and if his three-point shot is on, I'd rather have Kelly Oubre. Because although they're both, man, that's a really good question, because Satoransky is, you know, pretty good from three.
He missed out
on having, like, a qualified, you know, high three-point percentage for the year.
He creates shots for others, too, which is something, like, Oubre hasn't really added that facet to his game where he can create opportunities for his teammates. You know, he can get his own shot, which is inconsistent. He's obviously, like, the more athletic, better defender, better rebounder of the two of them, but I think it's a much tighter matchup than I expected it would be in terms of who you want on the floor for the fourth quarter, just because Satoransky has proven so much this year.
Right, yeah, and I had tweeted out that the lineup that I hope we see is Wall, Beal, Satoransky, Porter, and Morris. Just because, you know, Kelly Oubre is going through the slump. But if there's no Porter, it'd be interesting to see what that lineup is with Kelly Oubre and Porter swapping out. You know, because then you have so much youth, and that's not very exclusive here in DC, having a lineup that is, you know, pure youthful, like, young players, you know, drafted players for the most part. I guess that's a good problem to have, because, I mean, they both offer very, you know, Kelly Oubre, I feel like, is given the more, like, oh, he's the defensive presence, and Satoransky is, like, the playmaker. But, you know, Satoransky is respectable on defense, and if it's going to be switches, you know, I would hate to see, you know, Gortat be playing late and DeRozan gets switched onto him every possession and just drains the jump, the same jump shot over and over again, when it could be, you know, Satoransky and Oubre and Morris. So at least that's like all the length that you have, all the length that we could possibly offer is on the floor at that moment. You know, unless there was something nutty like Wall, Porter, Satoransky and Oubre and, you know, a big. But yeah, again, you know, this is a lot of creativity that we're presenting, and let's hope that our coach, maybe this leads us to the next part of our breakdown, but let's hope that our coach, you know, doesn't force, you know, Mahimi to play, doesn't force Gortat to play if they're not being effective like he really did during the regular season.
I've got one more question about the starting lineup before we go to coaching. Who would you rather have at this point in their career? Do you want Serge Ibaka or Markieff Morris? Do you think Ibaka still holds the edge there if both of them are playing power forward or small ball center? Ibaka, by the way, he is... How old is he now? He is... Okay, 1989, so that means he's like 29 years old, so still fairly young. It just seems like he kind of... His best days are behind him, in my opinion, a little bit. Let's see his numbers. He's averaging 12.6 points a game, 6.3 rebounds, which is, I think, second on the team after Valanciunas, and he still gets 1.3 blocks a game, barely any steals or assists. Do you think that Morris has the edge, or is he a little bit too slow and not quite at Ibaka's level as of right now?
I would say that I would pretty easily take Ibaka. Mainly because, you know, if we're talking about regular season, there's a lot of games where Morris definitely looks sluggish, looks like he doesn't care, he doesn't really go after rebounds, he's so, like, slow laterally and everything. But I feel like with Ibaka, there's a defensive presence that the Wizards are heavily lacking.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's nice that we made the playoffs. It sucks that, like, you know, we're getting the one seed, but we do have a pretty decent, you know, draft pick. And I'm hoping that, you know, we get our stuff together and we can evaluate a center that is young and defensive-minded, energy, you know, will show up every night. Between, like, Morris and, you know, sometimes Gortat, like, there's not a lot of effort for boards. And, you know, whether that's, you know, physical reasons that they can't get to them, or that it's just effort, you know, if we have a young big, or I know Serge Ibaka is 29, but he's kind of built that reputation of, you know, defense and rebounding. And he has, like, a three-point shot.
You know,
so that's always good.
The numbers are pretty similar between them. So as I mentioned, Ibaka gets 12.6 points a game, 6.3 rebounds, and then 1.3 blocks, just 0.8 assists. He shoots 36% from beyond the arc, and then when you look over at Morris, he's 11.5 points a game, so just 1 point fewer, 5.6, so right in the same ballpark. He gets 1.9 assists and 0.8 steals, but only 0.5 blocks, and he shoots slightly better, 36.7, so just 0.7% better from beyond the arc, but also 48% from the field. For all of the inconsistency that kind of plagues Markieff Morris year to year, he's turned it on, I think, in the, I guess, like, post-All-Star break since Wall went down portion of the season. So a lot of attention is going to Raptors coach Dwayne Casey for Coach of the Year honors. I personally don't think he deserves it because they didn't make, like, the Raptors didn't make as much of a jump as maybe, you know, like, the Pacers or the Blazers or the Utah Jazz, who, like, nobody thought they would be, I forgot if they're fourth or fifth place, but nobody thought they would be, you know, that highly ranked. Do you think there's a big edge in coaching for Dwayne Casey in terms of, like, the way he's just reshaped his team and adjusted based on all of the data and the numbers, like, hey, we've got to learn to move the ball, we've got to learn to shoot threes, we need to force the opponents off the three-point line and force them into mid-range shots, protect the rim with Ibaka and right. Jakob Poeltl. Do you think the coaching...
So basically, like, anti-Randy Whitman.
Yeah, essentially. And also, do you think if the Wizards lost this series, would Scott Brooks be on the edge of, you know, losing his job, or does he still have more time to, you know, gel with the Wizards? I feel like even if they lost this series, they should give him, they shouldn't fire him, is my opinion.
Yeah, that's I'm gonna answer the later question and get to the the first one afterwards. I think that's a tough, you know, unfortunately this organization seems to have a, you know, there's an excuse for everything. So I honestly feel like if the Wizards were to get swept, you know, nothing's, like, my gut tells me that nothing's going to change because Wall missed, you know, X amount of games. And assuming the Wizards get swept, which I really don't think they will.
No.
If they do, it probably is because Porter was out. You know, Beal is, like, I mean, he's on the floor, but barely alive. Because, like, of all the minutes he's played, you know, Wall maybe aggravates something. Kelly Oubre is, you know, still kind of, you know, trending downwards. And, you know, at that point, like, that's everything goes wrong, basically. So I don't see us getting swept. But if we were to get swept, I just think there's too many excuses that Brooks can kind of, you know, point to and be like, hey, like, I got us to the playoffs for back-to-back seasons, and this year, you know, if you would have told everyone, like, oh, Wall's going to miss, like, 40 games, like, what is our season going to go like? Nobody's going to say the Wizards are making the playoffs with, you know, without Wall for 40 years, or with, for 40 games. You know, he can credit his the development of Satoransky, you know, to, you know, coaching and Kelly Oubre until, like, the last, like, 20, 25 games, you know, was exploding off the charts, and Mike Scott, you know, playing all that. But, yeah, I don't think he's going to get fired regardless of result. Nah. So that's my answer to that.
What ended up being the results from that Twitter poll you posted of who's to blame for, like, the Wizards' underachievement this year? Was it the players, the coaches, or Mr. Ernie Grunfeld?
I believe it finished with Ernie, then the coach, then the players. Yeah. I feel like the coach finishing second was more knee-jerk to the... how Wall didn't play in the final game of the season, and, like, everyone's mad. I'm looking at it now. Ernie got 45% of the vote, the players got 36% of the vote, and coaching got 19%.
Oh, okay.
Had 94 votes.
I feel like the Wizards have enough talent to be, I'd say, the 4 seed.
Yeah, and I mean, there's only so much you can do, like, you know, it comes down, like, you have your money, and, like, go play. Like, what are you worried about? But yeah, so I don't know. I think yeah, like, at the root of it all, it's the GM, you know, the guy that gave Jody Meeks a 2-year guaranteed contract, got lucky with Mike Scott, gave Mahimi, like, way too much money, gave Jason Smith years and money, you know, some would argue Porter's contract,
Gortat's contract.
I don't, you know, I'm not in that. I just think we're misusing Porter as soon as we realize that Porter is very efficient from three and he should be getting more looks. I think the Wizards will be a lot better. But that's why I really like him playing as a shooting guard, because then they can have him. They should run, like, a Kyle Korver-like offense when Porter is in with the bench. And that should be a team for the bench. But, you know, if it was that easy, I'm sure anybody could be a coach.
So let's move to the bench. Well, let's start with coaches. What grade do you give Scott Brooks, and what grade do you give overall, like, throughout his tenure with the Raptors, Dwayne Casey, for, yeah, both teams, with both coaches with their respective teams, what grade did they get? And then move on to the bench. I think the Raptors bench has to be an A, and the Wizards bench is improved, but I would give it like a C-. And then for coaches, I would say, I guess Brooks is like, he's a solid B in my mind, because like his late game execution is poor, but he's really helped develop some of the younger players who under Randy Whitman would never be in the position where they're contributing so much now. And there are some guys who, like Chris McCullough, he hasn't done squat. Devin Robinson. All right, let's say B- for coaching. And then in terms of Dwayne Casey, I'll give him like a B+, because the team is playing really well, but you know, they never accomplished too much in the playoffs. So to recap, B+, B-, Casey versus Scott coaching, and then C, I think I said C minus, I can't really remember, it's been too long, yeah. Too many seconds, but yeah, C- for the Wizards bench, A for the Raptors bench. What do you think, bench first?
Bench first, I'm gonna say, because Satoransky started like 40 games, but I'm gonna say the bench is a C. What did you give them? A C?
Just
plus?
I think a C-. I don't remember.
Okay, yeah, I think you did a C-. Yeah. I'm gonna give them a C just because, you know, Mahimi, if we're comparing him to last season, he had a way better season. Mike Scott was a really nice pickup. You know, he provided some nice shooting, especially early on. I feel like just recently he's been picking it up. But, you know, he started off the season really strong. Satoransky, you know, now that he has all that experience as a starter, I'm hoping it'll trend, you know, continue as a bench piece. And then Kelly Oubre, you know, take out the last 20 games of the year, and he had, you know, a really strong season.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we're looking all the way through the bench, Jody Meeks, I mean, you know, he got us a W in Boston. Wait, did we lose? We lost that game.
No, we won. We won in overtime by one. I don't think we need to go through the whole bench, because those are, you know, the only guys who will actually be playing in these playoffs, so you don't have to worry about guys like, you know, what Jason Smith did in his 33 appearances or whatever, and you know, what Tim Frazier did and his 11 starts. Yeah, don't worry about that.
Yeah, Oubre, Tim Frazier was, like, pretty decent, too.
I like his energy, but I feel like energy with him and Jason Smith, it only takes you so far. Oubre ended the season shooting 34% from downtown. Huge step up. He also averaged 11.8 points, 4.5 rebounds, and 1 steal, 1 assist. Right. Not too shabby. Yeah. For was this his third year? I believe so. Yeah. Anyway, what do you give the coaches in terms of grades?
Coaches,
throughout their tenure with the team, not just this season.
Right. I think, you know, for Brooks, we got to the playoffs, but the late game, you know, players have to make shots, but at the same time, aside from that game in Boston, I honestly feel like it was the same play for every situation.
And that Boston play might have been an accident too.
And yeah, I was literally just about to say that. I'm pretty sure that Boston play was an accident. Kind of like the John Wall game winner.
You couldn't get the ball in bounds. It's like, all right, I guess John's got to pop this 30 footer.
Definitely, you know, knee jerk, which is good, but you know, it's I just can't give them more than a C-, regardless of the development of some players, you know, that were around with the previous tenure. He definitely gets some credit for that, but the late game execution, it'd be different if, you know, there were different plays set, and you know, Beal just honestly, you know, missed every shot that he took, and you know, the pick and roll like just didn't work or whatever the play was. But I can't give anything higher than C-, borderline like D+ for Brooks this season, and his tenure overall. Because unfortunately, I feel like he's taking a step down from last year. But I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, I mean it's tough. They only lost what, 6 games more than they did last year when Wall played essentially the entire year. Yeah, so I mean, that's not too bad when you look at the big picture. What kind of coaching grade do you give for Dwayne Casey? Is he that impressive, or did the playoffs kind of drop him down a few notches?
Right. Unfortunately, I don't really know too much about like what the Raptors have done you know, in during his tenure. But I would say, I mean, you're the number one seed in the East, I believe. They made it to the Eastern Conference Finals 1 year, right?
Yeah, they lost to the Cavs, who basically, yeah, I think it ended up being six games, but the Cavaliers were probably just sleepwalking,
you know, that,
through it.
I mean, it's an accomplishment that we haven't experienced here, right. You know, so that's definitely, can't take that away. You know, the willingness to adapt to the modern NBA is definitely something that, you know, not every coach can do. We're pretty well aware of it. But yeah, so it's pretty admirable what he's done. I would give Casey like a solid like B plus, but that's just because I don't know enough. But just from like taking a step back and seeing what he's done, you know, I would say a B plus. But I'm sure there's some things that he can be critiqued for. I believe something that could play a big factor is he might rely on the bench too much. So
I didn't think about it that way.
Yeah,
When you look at like the intangibles of this series, obviously the Wizards have the advantage, knowing that the last time they, like, first of all, they won two games without their best player this season, so that's kind of like a mental edge, I'd say. And then also the last time they faced in the playoffs, it was a 4-0 sweep, and the core of both teams remain intact. I don't know if they had Serge Ibaka back then, but basically, like, you know, the three starters. Actually, for the Wizards, it's... did they have Markieff Morris at the time? It might be, like... Okay, Porter wasn't starting, but essentially, like, the starting lineup was very similar.
Yeah.
It was Morris Nene, and... Was Nene power forward, or did he come off the bench? I can't quite remember. But essentially, the cores are the same for both teams in terms of their best players. One thing that could excite the crowd here in Washington a little more is just that it would be really cool to knock off the top team. So, say, like... Let's say, like, you know, they split in Toronto and it's 1-1, and then maybe the Wizards, like, take game 3. I'm sure that would, like, draw a really big crowd for game 4 if the Wizards have the edge and a chance to take a commanding 3-1 lead over the number one ranked team. I think that, you know, that's one intangible to look at. In terms of just momentum, though, I would say the Raptors have the edge, even though they've kind of looked a little bit shakier in recent weeks. The Wizards just have so many losses to bad teams, and it didn't stop at any point throughout the season. So I would think, like, if the Wizards were somehow able to go up, like, 2-0, 1-0, 3-1, whatever it may be, they'll just kind of pump the brakes and be like, okay, we've got the edge, we can kind of cruise a little bit. So are there any, like, intangibles I'm forgetting about that you think would have a big factor in this matchup?
I would say you pretty much nailed it. Aside from, you know, health and, you know, with the players that are questionable, and with, you know, how Beal finished the year, you know, logging heavy minutes, it's going to be a really interesting matchup. And I believe 106.7 The Fan, which I listen to like every day, that's why I reference it a lot, EB from the Junkies was freaking out because out of 62 8-1 matchups, the 8 seed has only won 6 times, and those 6 times, one of them I believe was when Derrick Rose like destroyed his knee and the Sixers ended up beating the Bulls. Another one was when the Warriors took down the Mavericks, I believe.
Yeah,
which were crazy. Like, I still remember that.
That was 06, like, maybe. Something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Which feels like just yesterday, but, you know, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I don't think, although we're an 8 seed, we're an 8 seed that should be, like...
A 6 seed, if it wasn't for a loss to, well, I guess a couple losses, but if we beat Orlando,
right.
You know, like, all those final 3 teams, like, it doesn't really matter so much if we were 6th or 8th, but, you know, I'm sure there are a lot more 6 seeds to upset a 3 seed than 8 versus 1.
If you're looking at just, like, the last game, you're right. Like, we could have been a 6 seed, we could have been a 7 seed, we're an 8 seed. But as the season as a whole, with the wall injury, with not being able to take care of business, the Raptors went 35-2 against teams under 500.
Jeez.
That's out of 59 wins, 35 of them were against teams under 500, and they lost twice. So that is a team that values and knows how important those games are, and they take care of them. And that's why they're the number one seed in the East. They have home court advantage. But the Wizards, if they could take care of business against under 500 teams, could easily have won the division, since they only lost it by like a game, I believe, to the Heat.
And, for sure. They'd have 50 wins easily. You know, if they won like half of those 18 games or whatever that were against lottery teams.
Should be a lot higher than half, but let's be like, you know, modest. Half. Yeah. They could be a 50-win team and they wouldn't be, they'd be like a 3 seed or a 4 seed. So the matchup by numbers, like you see 1-8, oh, there's no chance. Like UMBC tweeted at the Wizards, you know, wishing them luck. And it's not a UMBC versus UVA matchup. It's a lot closer. It's more like, I don't know college basketball that well, but it's more like a...
It would be like Butler taking down Duke or something like that. It's like a...
Right, yeah.
I don't know that... I mean, I just pulled that out of, you know...
But, I mean, I understand this, so I'm hoping... like Virginia Tech, you know, beating North Carolina. I don't know.
Okay. Anyway, but, we need a prediction for how this series is going to end. I'm saying Wizards in six.
Oh, damn. Well, yeah, that's my prediction, too. And, you know, I'm part of an email thread for another Wizards blog, and everyone's picking the Raptors, and I was the only one that picked the Wizards. Yeah, I mean, people are really, really high on the Raptors, and I understand it, and it's respectable, and they're the one seed. They took care of business, but we're not your typical eight seed.
Like, the Raptors have been down this road before, and I guess they lost to the Cavs, which is a lot more respectable, but, you know, they're a vulnerable team, you know, even if they restructured everything. I'm not, they don't strike fear. The only team in the Eastern Conference, I would say it's the Cavaliers first and then the Sixers, just because they're like a matchup nightmare. But
I'd much rather play the Raptors than the Sixers. Like, that's why a part of me was continuing to say, please don't play the 76ers, because they're smoking everyone and they've won like a billion games.
Nah, it's all lottery teams. It's all lottery teams.
Yeah, I'd rather play the Raptors, like, you know, and it's not because I want to play the number one team in the East. It's because I'd rather play a team that has a history of folding under pressure. So.
Cool. Well, Arthur, it's been a pleasure. Sorry to burn you guys' ears for 47-plus minutes, but I think we kind of dug into all the nitty-gritties. You know, there was no stone left unturned in this preview podcast, so... enjoy game one, and I will be back with Dustin Allwood, the godfather of Wizards Extra, tomorrow night to recap the game for you guys. Dustin, thank you. I guess we both have the same prediction, Wizards in six. We'll see what happens.
Let's get it.
Did I call you Dustin or Arthur? I meant to say Arthur.
But yeah, Wizards in six. You know, I'm hoping tradition continues and the Raptors come out with an L during game one.
Yeah. Alright, well, thanks so much for tuning in to Locked On Wizards, and we will be back with another fresh podcast after game one here Saturday night. Take it easy, everyone. Have a good night. The kid home, get the Patron and tell them that it's on. I do my two-step and let the link swing. Hold the drink with the left hand and show the pink ring. I got my drink and my two-step, my drink and my two-step. Got my drink and my two-step, my drink and my two-step. It's on, it's on, it's on. And I'm home, get the Patron and tell them that it's on. I got my drink and my two-step, my drink and my two-step. Got my drink and my two-step, my drink and my two-step. It's on. It's on, it's on, and I'm home. Get the Patron and tell them, hey, yo, they want to be.